Welcome to Mysterious Goings On, the podcast about creativity, writing, and mystery. Every week, we talk about all kinds of great fiction and meet the people who write it. We also feature explorations about creativity in all walks of life. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will join you right after this.
Experience the magic at the Knights of Lights, produced by the Kansas City Renaissance Festival. Stroll through a Renaissance wonderland with lights, shopping, food, music, entertainment, games, rides, and fun. Visits with Santa, Mrs. Claus, and Barbie the Christmas Elf will captivate you, and the sights, scents, and sounds of the festivities will enchant you. Open weekends, November 24th through December 31st, Fridays and Saturdays, 5:30 to 10 p.m., Sundays, 5:30 to 9 p.m., and Thursday, December 21st, 5:30 to 9. Info at kcrenfest.com, and for your chance to win tickets, email me, Alex, at alex@alexgpr.com. That's alex@alexgpr.com. Send your name, address, and phone number, and I'll send you two free tickets if you're one of our lucky winners. Again, Knights of Lights Festival. More information at kcrenfest.com. Some people spend years, if not decades, pondering the elusive question, what should I do with my life? For Janet Alcorn, the answer was a search query away. Cue one fateful afternoon when the hush of the medical library where she worked settled a little too heavily, and Janet Googled how to write a novel and set her destiny into motion. Since that pivotal moment, she has drafted two novels, contributed to horror anthologies, appeared on podcasts like this one, and even dabbled in the cutthroat world of quiz shows. Spoiler alert, she lost on Jeopardy, baby, but she sure won our attention. Got to hear more about that. Janet's foray into writing, far from being a whimsical detour, has become a serious endeavor. It's a journey punctuated with deliberate steps like the careful crafting of short stories, which she sees not as ephemeral side gigs, but as foundational building blocks to a flourishing literary career. How right she is, by the way. Speaking of spoiler alerts, I'll just tell you, that's my opinion. But how does one navigate the complex tapestry of creative writing? How can short stories serve as a scaffolding for something larger, something more profound? Well, hopefully we'll find out in our discussion. We're going to try to unpack the wisdom behind using short stories as a launchpad for a writing career and delve into some practical tips for breaking through the intimidating barriers of creative writing. So if you're out there wrestling with the blank page or contemplating that first audacious step into the world of words, Janet Alcorn serves as a compelling testament to the power of taking that initiative. And you know what? It'd be helpful if I let her speak. So I'm going to say, Janet, welcome to Mysterious Goings On.
Thank you, Alex. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited for the discussion today.
Me too. Now, we met online through, I did a seminar, right? Isn't that how we met? Yes.
The Tucson chapter of Sisters in Crime.
I've got to ask you about that real quick. First of all, was I great? No, I'm just kidding.
You were fabulous.
Thank you. But I was going to ask you, though. We had a couple of guests on previously who we've asked about the power of being part of groups and things like that. And I'd love, just since that's right where we met, because I loved your group. It was small but mighty. People were lovely. Great questions. Really good interactions. What kind of value have you found in being a member of Sisters?
Being a member of Sisters has been amazing. And I want to come back to that, but let me just take a quick step back and say that I don't think I would have ever submitted a story anywhere if I hadn't become part of a writing group. I lived up in Flagstaff, Arizona until about 3 years ago. And Flagstaff is a fairly small town, but I found this National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo group. And that led to taking this months-long class on revision and making some writer friends, which led to becoming part of a brand new critique group. And that critique group, they were the first people I ever showed any of my creative writing to other than my husband. And they were so encouraging. And they're like, this story is great. You should enter it in this contest. And I did enter it and I won. And I don't think any of that would have happened if it hadn't been for having this incredible supportive group of other writers cheering me on and helping me out. And Sisters in Crime is filling that role for me now, as I've settled more into crime fiction as my primary genre and moved to Tucson. Moving during a pandemic is a very surreal experience. So the chapter, helped me connect right away with other writers in the area. And even though we only ever saw each other online, it was still a connection. And they've been great. They are a wonderful group. They actually sweet talked / strong armed me into running for president of the chapter, and I'm running unopposed. So I think I'm about to not have a life for a while.
Well, early congratulations, Madam President. though, it's the groups. I went to my first writing group, my grandpa who wrote, I told you about him, I think, in my thing, my webinar. My audience has heard enough about him, so I won't recap. But anyway, he was a writer. And he took me to one of his groups, and I just found it, and I was young. I was like 15 and wanted to write, but I didn't, and I was just found it very, like, wow. Because I was like a kid actor. I love to act and do stuff. So I wasn't like afraid of people or anything like that. But I just thought the idea of having people read your stuff seemed very intimidating. And it takes a lot of courage. Like, I used to think it took courage to get up on stage and do things like that. But man, there's something also, though, about taking things that you've already conceivably slaved over and then handing it over to everybody and listening. How is that? Are there some nerves involved? Am I right about that?
There are so many nerves involved. I was scared to death the first time I submitted a story to my critique group, and it was the first short story I'd ever written. And it was about 1,000 words. I mean, it was, right on that cusp of flash fiction short story. And I was kind of just messing around. I had this idea while I was cleaning my garage one day. Oh, the glamour of the writing life, right? And I'm like, I'm going to give this a shot. And it's just this little, first person, present tense, short narrative.
Right.
And they loved it. And I was just floored. I thought, I kind of handed it over super tentatively. Like, this is the first thing I've ever written. And, help me make it better, but I know it's not very good. And they were like, it's great. And I about fell out of my chair. So, and I still get nervous anytime I let anybody read anything. And criticism, it's hard to take constructive criticism, no matter how kind, because the things that we create, they're part of us, right?
Right.
Like, what was it Hemingway said about writing is easy, just, open a vein and bleed. That's a not exact quote, but I don't want to be overly melodramatic here, but anything that I think people write, it's very personal. It's your creation. So yes, it's hard, but it's absolutely necessary. I don't think you can get any better as a writer if you don't actually give your stuff to people and ask them what they think.
I think you're right. I think you have to get over this. You have to lose a little bit of your ego too. And even if sometimes the critiques are really okay, I'm just going to say, you don't have to agree with this, Shannon. I will say it on my behalf. Even if some of the critiques are kind of dumb or they're thoughtless, it seems, there's also the people who just like to hear themselves talk. And yeah, I mean, not asking you to agree, just saying. And so you have to cut through the chaff to get to the wheat, which is the people are going, this would be, in my opinion, so much more gripping if you moved this part over to this part, those kinds of structural things. I love that. Or, hey, this dialogue is a little wooden, a little creaky, and somebody who's good at giving critiques. Well, I always do this. I always say, I love, 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 or I really like X. And I think if you keep that in there and maybe shore up the Y and Z, you got something. That's my opinion. And usually that's fine. A little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down, right?
Oh, I agree. And I think it's also super useful to know what's working, because you don't want to inadvertently mess up what works. And I think, I've been very lucky that most of the critiquers that I've worked with have been kind. Doesn't mean that they aren't honest, but they're kind about it. I've had a couple that were kind of mean, but even the mean ones, even the harsh ones, I feel like set it aside, go have your emotional reaction in private, you know, thank them for their feedback, go have your reaction,
Right.
come back a couple of days or a week later. And what I try to do is get beyond the tone and get beyond the, what is this person? How dare they? They don't understand my vision here and all that other pretentious nonsense, right? That goes through our little writer brains. And you
Right.
try to get to, okay, this is a reader had this reaction. Why? You know, they may not be right about what I should do to fix it, but clearly there's something that bugged them. And is it part of a pattern? Have other people mentioned something like that? Can I
Yeah.
get to the truth underneath those words that annoyed me?
Yeah, and I'm with you, you know, and back to the ego thing too, is if you can, you know, writers who are listening, hello writer, hi. You know, you've got to be able to kind of check your ego at the door with these things. And if you find that you just can't do that, that's something you really need to work through. Because let me give you just my thought on this is just that, like a few months ago, I had a book club read my last novel. It was so great. It was like right after I met you, Janet, at the thing. It was like a couple of weeks later, I think, or was it right before? I think so. Anyway, but then you get the you don't get beta readers. That's what we call or writers group people. You just get people. The book's done. You can't fix anything, and then you hear everything that's wrong with it, you know. But fortunately for me, even though there was some stuff in there, like I kind of had to like sh you know I had to silo some. Some I was just like, okay, that thanks, thank you, but in your mind you're like, no, that's not me. Then you then but so the worst part is when you find the couple of things is like, oh, why weren't you in my beta group, you know? Because I don't know about you, but for my last novel too, I went ahead and went crazy, and I created like an online form, I sent free copies, and I had like 9 beta readers. So enlightening. So listeners, I guess what I'm trying to say is, and I think Janet will agree with me on this, is that if you're not part of a group, create your own of people who you know who read and make them part of your beta group. And then, but make sure you treat them right, you thank them adequately, and give them the tools they need to tell you what they think. So I appreciate you saying that. I just wanted to go there for a minute, particularly since you're the president now. Do how many of
Not
those
quite yet. Not
almost there.
viciously.
So,
You
how many chapters are there, though, across
know,
America?
I don't know offhand.
Huh.
I know that there are three in Arizona, two in Phoenix, and one here. I think New York's got a bunch, California's got a bunch.
Chicago.
I mean, there's, I think any city of any size probably has one, and you'll get some more regional ones, but I honestly do not know. So.
Well, but it's still one of the, obviously you've already said, it's one of the more sizable and broad-reaching groups. So I need to look and see if Kansas City has one, because they know it's not just, I mean, men can join, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sisters and misters.
But we're just not allowed to talk.
Oh, you're absolutely allowed to talk. And we have male members. Yeah, I mean, Sisters in Crime started out, I want to say Sarah Paretsky was one of the key people that founded it. And it started out to try to deal with this, you know, the inequities in publishing, particularly in crime fiction, where the work of women wasn't getting noticed. But it has evolved into this wonderful professional organization for crime writers, right? Regardless of gender, it's super inclusive, and that includes, you know, being trans inclusive and all of that. But the name has stuck, and I, you know, and it's a fun name, but it's absolutely not meant to exclude anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I was teasing, of course,
Yeah. Oh,
but you know,
I just want to be
yeah,
sure your listeners hear that, because I think it's important, you know.
it's 100%
Yeah.
important. Yeah, but it's like, just try and stop me from talking. Give me a break. But here's the thing. So here we go. She's drinking her water. I almost got her on that one. So let's talk about short stories. You drafted 2 novels, and I don't know where they stand with that. Are you attempting to sell those, or were they works in progress to kind of train yourself, or tell us a little bit about that first.
Sure. So the first one is a kind of combination of time travel romance and romantic suspense, because of the when I first started, I didn't know what genre I wanted to work in. So I started writing what I liked to read, and I was very much in my Outlander phase right then. But you know, the whole Scottish Highlander thing has been way overdone, and I've never been out of North America, so that wasn't going to work for me. So I did something a little bit different. That is complete, depending on your definition of complete. And in fact, I actually have a full request out with an agent right now.
Nice.
I did, participated in an online conference from a different chapter of Sisters in Crime, and that it included an opportunity to pitch on Zoom, and I pitched and got a full request. So we will see what happens with that. I do not know. I'm trying not to get my hopes up too much because it's a weird little book and it's kind of hard to place, and you know, but we'll see. The second one is a little bit more mainstream. It's more of a domestic suspense. We've got a serial killer, we've got family secrets, we've got a deathbed confession, and I am doing a massive revision of a very messy draft. And in fact, that's what I was doing right before we started recording the show, was working on that. It's called Delta Dawn, and we'll see what happens with it too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, congrats on getting the full request. I mean, I think I've had a few fulls in my career and some partials, and you know, then the general give me the bigger synopsis, you know, that kind of thing. But getting a full is huge. Are you definitely on the traditional path then? Are you going to consider hybrid or indie, or you want to go full traditional?
I would like to do traditional, and a lot of that is just there's so many pieces of what's required to be successful in indie that I'm not sure I'm particularly good at. And I might be selling myself short, but like, I don't have marketing experience. That's the biggie. Like, I love getting out and talking to people. What we're doing here, this is fantastic. I could do this all day.
Yeah.
But some of the pieces of marketing, and especially while I have a full-time day job, I just, that feels like it might be beyond me. And I just want to try the traditional route. I'm trying to go into this very, very realistically. And that's part of why I enjoy writing short stories, is that the barrier to entry is so much lower. It's so much easier to get my work in front of an audience writing short than to try to get a novel traditionally published.
Right.
But, you know, I'm open. I came to this somewhat late in life, and, you know, it's not how I have to feed myself, so I don't have that pressure, right? I do
Same
have a day job
right.
that keeps right. keeps the roof over my head and the lights on. So yeah, I'm very open to what opportunities I'm able to find.
Well, then let me ask you structurally then about writing then, though. Do you find writing short stories is more challenging, less challenging than writing a novel? Tell us, compare and contrast, if you would.
Sure. For me, they're much less challenging. Now, I've talked to people who are like, I can't write short. I can write novels so much easier. Yeah, I'm not that person. I love both formats as a reader and as a writer, but I am a very slow novelist. Like, I can fast draft. I can bust out those 50K words during NaNoWriMo, but the editing takes me forever. And some of it's just lack of confidence. It's still that feeling of like, well, I don't really know what I'm doing. And, you know, a short story, it's just a smaller package. I can see the whole structure in my head a little bit easier. I can kind of see if the plot's not working or there's something off with the characterization, because the canvas is a lot smaller. There's less to keep track of. And I absolutely love the short story form. I've been reading short stories since probably middle school, and I love them. So
yeah. I'm with you on that. I mean, I've written several mysteries and stuff, but I found even in the midst of my series that I put it together a book of just short stories involving secondary characters in my universe, which to me was a nice palate cleanser. And it let me like go in all these different directions. But I've also done short story writing and entered some contests and done pretty well with that too. And I find myself, as I get older, I've been writing professionally like fiction since 2008 or something like that. So about 15 years. I find though, as I, you know, I'm in my 50s, and as I get older, I find that I'd rather do something and maybe busier in some ways. I find I'd rather do something like a short story because it's something you can finish and accomplish rather quickly. Right. And sometimes you need that, right? Like, I mean, like I said, I've written some books, but I've never been a bestseller or anything like that. And I'm proud of them. But man, there's nothing better, like you've done, though, to win publication in a literary journal or win a contest. I mean, that's got to just feel incredible.
It's really, really fun. Now, you know, and I want to be very honest that the contests that I've won are regional. They're not these huge national, you know, but they matter, and it's
yeah,
fun.
They matter.
And especially the ones where you get feedback as part of the contest is really, really great, because you're getting eyeballs on your work and you're getting these helpful comments from contest judges who are seeing tons of stories, right? So
yeah.
They have some experience. And even if you don't win, you get something useful out of it. But I totally agree about them being something you can finish in a shorter amount of time. I'm slow, even with short stories. It takes me, you know, 2-3 weeks usually to get a good 5,000 word story. And that's if I'm really making the effort. But that's a lot faster than a novel. And you get that, I won't call it instant gratification, but it's a lot quicker gratification. You get it out there, you get that feedback, you get eyeballs on it. And I consider like short stories are a playground, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to try out this point of view character that I don't think could carry a novel, but boy, she's interesting. So I want to, you know, write this 2,500 word short story with this particular voice, or, you know, maybe I want to try writing in present tense, or I want to try a different genre. Like the only horror I've ever written is short fiction. I don't know that I would ever write a horror novel. Maybe, probably not, but it sure is fun to write short.
Have you ever written anything short that you later thought, I'd like to integrate this into a novel, and done that?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, I wrote a short piece for Tucson Sisters in Crime anthology, in fact, called Adam Carmona and the Case of the Saguaro Ripper. And as I was writing it, I had to cut it to pieces to make word count. And I thought, oh, they're never going to publish this because it's chopped up so much. And they did, which was nice. But I got to thinking, this could easily be a novella, if not a novel. And I may go back to it because I like my main character. I like my antagonist. I mean, how can you not like a serial killer that hides disemboweled bodies in saguaro cactuses out in the desert? I mean, you know, come on. That's just fun. Right? I have a very
Yes.
strange sense of fun. But, you know, I feel like that could carry in a longer form. And I may get to that one of these days.
Here's one benefit besides building confidence, is like you've already said, you got a request for a full manuscript from an agent. So I can only assume, and you correct me, of course, that in your query, you mentioned, I have placed in this competition. I have to tell our listener about how you use short stories in that regard to try to move bigger projects forward.
I think the first thing is, I mean, short stories are publication credits if they're published or placed in a contest, right? So they're things that you can then leverage. First of all, you can get them out there in social media. You're building credibility. Now I am a published author.
Yep.
Right? I can call myself a published author. I can call myself an award-winning author, although that feels too pretentious to me. But you could, right?
It's an award you won.
You know, you can talk about my award-winning short story, blah, 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 was published in blah, 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 right? And it makes you sound like a professional. It makes you sound like you've got some credibility. So there's that from just a very practical standpoint. I've heard a lot of mixed advice around what counts as a publication credit when you're writing a query letter. And some people are kind of like, you know, if it's not Alfred Hitchcock or Ellery Queen, don't bother. I kind of roll my eyes at those people, honestly.
I'm rolling my eyes really hard.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe you don't mention your high school literary journal, although Stephen King did, and On Writing, he talked about getting published in his like middle school or elementary school, I think it was. But, you know, I think it's absolutely legit to say, you know, my short fiction has been published in the blah, blah, blah anthology and the blah, blah, blah journal and have won these awards. It's one sentence out of your query letter that, again, it gives you that credibility.
Well, that's the thing. And if you know, I would just tell the listener that if you don't have, you know, if you can't toot your own horn and you can't take the things you have and use them that way, you're only hurting yourself. I think it, you mentioned On Writing, which I've read a million times, and I've got the audiobook, so I've listened to Uncle Stevie read it to me so many times. But he talks about that, right? About, you know, and he makes up like query letters and how to do them. And I was going to ask you, since you brought it up, and I haven't queried anybody in a long time because I either enter contests directly or I just write my own stuff. But these days, but are the query letters very similar to what Uncle Stevie says in his book still, or are the query emails, or is it changed?
I think they're a little bit different. I actually just finished listening to On Writing for the umpty gajillionth time about 2 weeks ago. I love that book. I'm a huge Stephen King fangirl. I have been since high school. He's one of my literary idols, and I promise I will stop gushing about Stephen King. But, you know, On Writing was written in like 1999 to 2000. And yeah, the industry's changed. The expectations have changed. One of the biggest things that's changed is this having to provide comparable titles, basically telling the agent, giving them a clue where your book would sit on the shelf with things that have already been published in your genre. I absolutely hate coming up with comps. I'm terrible at it. I don't know any writer that likes it. But that's a big change that has just become expected now in querying, and it drives me crazy. But there we are.
Can you, I mean, really? Okay, I am learning something brand new here. So can you just off the top of your head, say, give me the sentence, how it might read. Just make it up. I'm just curious how it would sound.
Well, people do it different ways. Some do it kind of like the Twitter pitch party style. You know, my book is, I don't know, The Lost Boys meets Outlander, which I would pay good money to read, by the way. I'm just making this up.
Right, so you could
do that. But some will say something like, you know, my book blends the troubled woman starting over in a small town themes of Virgin River with the domestic violence menace of Nora Roberts's, what the heck was that book called? I comped it. That's, I'm giving you a bad version of my comp sentence for my first novel, but you know, it's like that. And yeah. And there's all these rules, like nothing more than 3 to 5 years old. You can't comp these huge phenomena like Stephen King or Harry Potter, you know. And I think sometimes people fudge those rules a little bit. But yeah, it's very, very, very difficult because unless you're writing something really formulaic that, you know, your book is not going to be an exact fit. So you have to think about like, what are the pieces that might be similar and who are the readers? Who would be interested in reading my book and what are they reading?
Right. Well, and I've used that a little comps a little bit. And I had a short story that I've had for years and I've recycled it into a couple of contests that's won or done really well in. And I was just like, it's like trying to remember something meets the Twilight Zone because it's that style, right? You know, everything's not what it seems, you know, it's the old O. Henry model, you know, but it's that kind of thing. So I get that now, but I was just unaware that wow, they really want. So they're basically saying, already tell us how we need to market this thing if we buy it, right?
Correct. And okay. Some I've seen where they even ask for marketing plans, although when you query, although I think that's more common with nonfiction.
Yeah.
But you know, they'll ask like who's the target audience, those kinds of marketing like questions, even in traditional publishing. So it's, yeah, marketing is becoming essential, I think, for any author.
And that's the thing too, is even with traditionally published books, which, you know, there's more marketing, there's some marketing, but it's usually far less than most people think it'll be. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. I mean, either way you do it, right? But at the very least, it would be nice if you had a publisher who at least said, okay, here are the things. I can't imagine they just say your book's being published, good luck. I imagine they say, okay, look, we're going to put this out. Here are the things we want you to start doing or do, right? You know, so at least you have a roadmap. It's just, I think a lot of authors are unprepared for the fact that, oh, wow, I have a roadmap and I'm expected to gas up the car and drive.
Yeah, I don't have a traditional book deal in fiction. I did, however, just publish an academic monograph that actually came out earlier this year in my day job as a librarian. And I actually became quite frustrated because I would ask the publisher, give me a roadmap, you know, and I knew enough about publishing from my fiction work to kind of know, you know, how do we translate this? I want to promote this, right?
Right.
And they gave me nothing. Like it was like pulling teeth. They did ask for things like, you know, where should we send this to be reviewed? And I gave them all of that and just, you know. So they asked that kind of stuff, but like they were very unhelpful and they seemed very baffled that I was even asking these questions.
Is it because it was an academic piece, you know, or?
Well, but this publisher doesn't just publish academic.
Oh.
And this is why I'm really glad that I'm doing this show under my pen name so that, you know, people, yeah, because I'm not trying to be mean. I firmly believe in being very positive in any industry. It's a small world. And besides, who wants to hang out with negative people? But I found it very surprising because I was at least expecting like that they'd give me a blurb to use or some art to use or something. And it was nothing. Like, nope, nothing.
That blows me away. Wow. Oh, man. Well, maybe they need a marketing plan.
Right? Like we even, my co-editor and I even offered to do a signing at this big conference that was directly relevant to the subject matter of the book. And we were both attending and the publisher was attending and like, they never got their act together. They sort of made noises about it and then they never followed through. It was very odd. It was very odd. Now, maybe I just am clueless about academic publishing, but I mean, I've been an academic for a really long time and this isn't my first book. So I don't know. It was odd.
Well, there you go, folks. I mean, I think that's a great point, though, Janet, you're making is that, you know, it's never quite what you think or expect it to be in the world of publishing, no matter what side of it you're on. Let's kind of go to, I know we're getting close on our time here already. I can't believe this.
No, go so fast.
Let's kind of lightning round some things, though. I'd love it if I know for a fact, I've got a listener right now listening to this show who is where you were before you went to your first writers group and way before you were, you know, president-elect of a local chapter of Sisters in Crime. But when you were thinking about it, what do you tell somebody who might be a little paralyzed by, not fear is not the right word, but anxiety about getting started? I know what I would tell people who are like trying to put some things on paper, but are feeling like, oh, I'll never be any good, or I don't know what I'm going to do. Do you have any advice for people to get started with creative writing?
I do. And the first piece is going to sound very trite, but just start, put that pen to paper and start, like, you know, that's the first step. And I think the hardest hurdle, write a flash piece, write, you know, write a poem. I don't know, write something, right? The other thing is read the kind of things you think you want to write. So if you want to write short stories, read short stories. If you're writing short crime fiction, there is an anthology that comes out every year that's what used to be called Best American Mystery Stories. And the title has changed a little bit, but Otto Penzler is the editor. And then they have a guest editor who's a big time crime writer. It's the best of the best. You can't go wrong. There's never a dud in those anthologies. And you'll start seeing this is what's selling right now. This is what people are liking. So there's that. And then I would say, you know, start with a good book or two on the basics of the craft of writing fiction. That was what I had no idea about. Like I had read since I learned to read, right? And read good things and was an English major and all that jazz. But fiction, writing fiction is a craft. It's a set of skills. And just like you wouldn't try to build a cabinet if you never learned any woodworking, you probably aren't going to write a really great story if you haven't learned anything about the craft. And there's some wonderful books. I mean, if you want, I can send you a few of my favorites if you want to share in the show notes.
Janet, would you do that, please? I would love to share that. I mean, I'm always going to say on writing, by the way, I'm always going to say on writing, just like you would, I'm sure. But anything else you've got that would help? Yeah. Because and I'd love it if you could give me a cautionary thing. You know, tell the listener, though, where's the area where a lot of folks go wrong? What's a dead end when you're starting out?
What I see just from people I've been critique partners with is the not learning and practicing the craft. Like there's a lot of beginner mistakes that every writer makes, including me. And there are a couple of books that can really help you learn pretty quickly to not make those mistakes. And, you know, you can save yourself some time. Things like the stilted dialogue and just, you know, those common rookie mistakes. We've all made them.
Yep.
Right. But why not cut to where you're, you know, learn the skills to not do that. Right. And people have gone before you that you can learn from. So that's really the biggest thing is avoiding those really obvious beginner mistakes. And after that is practice, right? You know, read about the craft and learn, but you also just have to write and write and write.
Yeah. And can I throw some advice out there too, and I had to learn this a little bit. Don't be competitive with other writers. Any thoughts on that?
100%. Yes. Other writers. I mean, it's a professional community. You know, I mean, I've been a librarian for over 30 years. Librarianship is a professional community. Other librarians are not my competition, even when we're applying for the same jobs. They are colleagues. And the same is true with other writers. You never know when that person that you have an interaction with is going to be somebody that maybe is in a position to help you out later on, or that you may just make a friend. But they're absolutely, I think, you know, publishing is a really, really brutal business. It's extremely difficult to make a living. I think it was just a survey that came out from the Authors Guild that talked about what was it, the average author's annual income from writing was something like 10 grand a year,
Yeah.
right? And that's an average that includes the Stephen Kings on one end, right? So you can imagine how it is for most of us. You need your fellow authors. You need that community. They're what are going to keep you going. They're going to understand the pain in the way that your non-writing friends are not. We can help each other. We can support each other. I think we have to.
I agree. And I tell people to try not to be too terribly performative about the act of writing. Just do what Stephen King says, close the door and write. We all do the coffee shop thing every now and then, and put it out on your Instagram, and that's fine if it, but remember that I always tell people, remember that your work is ultimately the signatory, or maybe that's the wrong word, but your work is the proof of the pudding. And I tell people, I see this all the time, and I don't mean to sound negative, okay, Janet. You're more positive than I am. I'm a little more negative than you are, but anyway, I'm going to say it anyway. I see people all the time, like on billboards or writers' Facebook pages, things like that, and they're asking all these questions about, they're asking questions that are, and I get a little frustrated because some of the questions to me are just so basic, in the sense of, like, if you were actually writing like Janet, like you just suggested, you probably wouldn't be asking these kinds of questions. I'm trying to think of one or two. I guess I can't. I'm failing on that, so it's not a great anecdote here. But I guess I'm trying to say, I often end up just commenting and just saying, "Get your butt in the seat and write." But I just keep hearing, "How long should it take me to write my first novel? How long, or what's this due? Or, what if I fail during November writing month?" And all that stuff. And it's just try. You'll just try. I guess I'm cranky old man, but I just tell people, I just like, and I understand. And I'm not trying to, like, say to people who don't know, have basic, or just asking for basic information. It's just, you kind of start to see folks who, it's like, you're spending way too much time on talking about writing and far too little time writing. I guess that's my point.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. One of, I did a lot of reading about writers, in part because I just find it fascinating, like the day in the life kind of stuff. But I think I mentioned earlier I was a big Outlander fan, and in the Outlandish Companion that came out years and years and years ago after like the first four books, Diana Gabaldon talks about how Outlander came to be. And basically, she was on a CompuServe group. Remember CompuServe? I think you and I
Oh
are
my
both old
goodness.
enough to remember
Wow.
CompuServe, right? Way
Yep,
back in the
yep.
day. And she was a mom with a couple of young kids, and she was on this group. And she answered somebody's question, and she was writing this kind of description. It was a childbirth scene. And everybody was like, this is really good. And that kind of encouraged her. So she decided she wanted to write a novel, and this is the line that stuck with me. And she decided that the best way to learn to write a novel was to write one. And
There you
that
go.
line, I read that piece several years before I started writing, but that line stuck with me. And so, yeah, when I did the I'm going to Google how to write a novel, that was what was in my head, is that the best way to do this is to do this
Right.
and figure it out as I go. But
Right.
yeah, you have to take that first step. And I'll just say it's gonna be bad. I'm not sure if we're completely PG rated here, so I won't give the exact Hemingway quote that
You
Anne
can.
Lamott quote. Okay. But basically all first drafts are shit.
Yeah, there.
And it's the truth. And that is an incredibly liberating idea. Just put the words on the paper. It's gonna suck. It's gonna suck so bad it's gonna create a black hole of suckitude that threatens to engulf your entire office. That's fine. Because that's what revision is for.
Yeah, and it's a cliche, but it happens to be true. I mean, I have three full-length books I wrote that are just never going anywhere ever. And actually, if somebody said, "Can I read them?" I'd say, "You're free to read them. I don't think you'll be able to get through them, but okay, because they are shit. But that's okay, because you learn." That's exactly it, Janet. And that's the thing. I guess I'm just that way about without it. I'm just like, just do what I did. I mean, I would ask my grandpa, "How do you get started?" And he would just tell me, but he didn't really tell me much. He was basically telling me, "You're not gonna know until you just start trying to write, so you do." And so Janet Alcorn is telling us how she does it and what she's doing to build her creative writing, her fiction career, and hinging and foundationally on short stories, I think is a remarkably smart way to go. And where can people read some of your fiction, some of your work?
Best starting point is my website, janetalcorn.com. And I have a, there's a tab on that site called Writing, and you'll find all my links to all my short stories. Some of them are free to read. There's one that actually was a contest winner that is right now it's free online. The contest, this year's contest is coming to a close. And so when the new winners are announced, my story will come down. So if you move quickly, you can get that one for free. If you sign up for my newsletter, please sign up for my newsletter. I'll send you another one of my contest winners. It's called Collateral Damage, and it's about a very cranky, very paranoid post-apocalyptic survivor in the Arizona desert when something happens to completely upend his world. So that one's fun, and it's loosely based on a real life encounter I had with a very strange prepper person out in the middle of nowhere outside Winslow, Arizona. So that one's fun and free. All you can sign up for my newsletter. I will not spam your inbox. At most you'll get something monthly, and I haven't even managed that lately. So
Yeah, I try to do that too, although mine are, I try to, but sometimes you have those months where you have a little more than you do others and people get a little cranky. And I'm like, well, I didn't say I'd never email you. I mean, there's a point. But I do notice here, you've got a couple of good Christmas things. You've got a creative nonfiction and about your mom passing away, and my condolences.
Thank you.
And then you have this horror short story, The Fine Print, which I am excited to read. There's a lot here. This is a, by the way, folks, this is, if you're out there thinking about setting up your own author website, you could do a lot worse than this one. This one's great.
Thank
Janet
you.
Alcorn, suspense, horror, romance. She's got her blog, her writing about her newsletter, contact. It's all right there. Links to all her social. I just subscribed just literally while she was talking. I subscribed
Thank
to
you.
be on her list. And I love this stuff. This is really well done. Hey Janet, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to speak with me because you taught me a few things today and reminded me of a few good lessons that even the most experienced of us can easily forget, And so I really appreciate it. And your I got to say your energy is infectious and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the kind words. Thank you for the opportunity. I always have this sort of imposter syndrome around, well, I haven't published a book yet. Why would anyone want to listen to what I have to say? So thank you for treating what I have to say as though it has value. This has been a wonderful experience, and I'm just really, really grateful. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome, but you already said it. Make friends with writers because you never know, right? One of these days I might be going, hey, remember me? You did my show, Miss Best-Selling Person. Could you give me a little help? A blurb for my show, perhaps? You never know,
Anytime.
but the important thing is because you meet great people, and that's why I love to do this show. And although you know what you have got me thinking is like I do technically kind of have a writer's group by doing this show, but you're not critiquing my work, and I probably need to step outside of just waiting till I have a manuscript for beta, but actually maybe with my WIPs, my work in progress, and have a group. So I'm going to explore that. So thank you. Again, the website will be on my website, and don't panic. It's mgopod.com. You'll find the show notes with links to all of Janet's stuff, and she's going to send me a list of books that if you need a little push or just a little bit of re-education about your writing career, she's going to send us her picks and we'll put those on there and you can buy them there. Okay, again, Janet Alcorn, thank you so much for joining us here on the big show.
Thank you. This was really fun.
Ah, the season of giving is almost upon us, and nothing speaks to the holiday spirit quite like the written word. Mysterious, suspenseful, and sometimes downright thrilling. If you're a faithful listener of Mysterious Goings On, and I have to assume you are because you're listening to my voice right as we speak, we've cooked up something special just for you. So grab a cup of hot cocoa or some cider, tune in, and listen up. We're doing a holiday book giveaway. We're giving away a collection of riveting books that have one thing in common. They've been featured on your favorite podcast, Mysterious Goings On. And because we love our listeners, there's a cherry on top. There's even going to be autographed books by yours truly, J. Alexander Greenwood. This is your chance to score some great books for the readers on your holiday season list. So here's how you do it. It's very simple. Go over to jalexandergreenwood.com. That's the home of my work and the John Pilate Mysteries and all my other books and writings. And join our email list. You just go to the homepage, scroll down, you'll see a place where you can enter your email. Then once you get the email in your inbox, you have to verify it, and boom, you're in, right? Trust me, your inbox won't regret it. You will only get periodic emails. I won't be bothering you every day. That's so obnoxious. It'll just be to let you know whenever we have a new post on the blog for the site, or if we have special announcements. And of course, we also have giveaways and discounts that are available only to people who subscribe to the list. Sign up there, or if you're already signed up there, you're already in for a chance to win. Hey, do you want to up the odds? You can earn extra entries by sharing our social media posts about the giveaway. Each share is an additional roll of the dice in your favor. So even if you win the grand prize, let's say, you're still up to win another prize pack. So we're giving away several. So this is kind of a cool thing. All you have to do is screenshot your share and send it to me, alex@alexgpr.com. It's that simple. Just screenshot it, say, here's an additional entry for you, Alex. I shared this on my Facebook, or I shared this on Insta, or I shared this on Twitter, wherever you want to share it. Okay, here are the things. The dates to remember. You got to mark your calendar now. This giveaway kicks off on November 1 and runs until December 7th, 2023. And here's what you can win. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to have three different prize packs. Okay, second runner-up scores one book by a featured author and one book autographed by me. The first runner-up takes home two books by featured authors on the show and one autographed book by me. And the grand prize winner receives three books by authors who've been featured on Mysterious Goings On, plus one autographed book from me, J. Alexander Greenwood. I mean, think about this. There is enough there for you to give away all of these and make so many people happy, or you can just, hoard them for your own self. And who will know and who will blame you if you do? Okay, what's the fine print? Well, unfortunately, we can only ship to addresses within the United States. To our international listeners, we promise we're working on ways to include you in the future. I could probably swing a thing where I can give away a free copy of one of my books on ebook. If you're part of this mailing list, you will be notified when those books are made free on Amazon.com, and you can just go get them. So there you go. And that's it, folks. It's a giveaway that's as simple as it is rewarding. Join us in celebrating not just the mystery genre and the thriller genre and the suspense genre and more, but the spirit of the season. And don't wait. These books won't read themselves, and in the world of mysterious goings-on, you never really know what's around the next page. Good luck, and as always, keep listening and keep reading. Hey, this is Alex Greenwood. You know, I've been told for years that I'm really killing it in this podcasting game. Actually, I've heard that from my friend Jamie Green. Jamie, I think you're killing it in the podcasting game.
Well, I appreciate that. Yes, we are both natural-born killers for podcasting.
And of cocktails. So I think it'd be fun, per your idea, that we get together for a drink and a think about some bizarre Kansas City shenanigans, usually murders.
I love it. Let's call it Going to Killin' City. Once a month, historic murder, pair it with a killer cocktail. Have a great time.
Get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on Mysterious Goings On. Be sure to follow Mysterious Goings On wherever you get your podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget, you can get the links to books and other things mentioned on the show at mgopod.com. Until next time, keep reading.